meandering in the margins of medicine, it's the Shortcoat Podcast.
Weird news,
fresh views,
helpful clues and interviews.
By students, for students.
Subscribe to our weekly show at theshortcoat.com.
Welcome to the Shortcoat Podcast. This is Aline. I'm filling in for DJ Dave Etler on this fine but sad week when he's away on vacation. I'm here with John Pianta.
Hi.
Hi. I'm here with Cole Cheney.
Hello.
And I'm here with Casey McCleary.
Hello.
And Corey the intern. We'll say hello for him.
There's a
We don't let him talk.
So we successfully managed to set up the rig and we're recording a show and we're here to talk about our feelings and other feelings.
And Dave's posted some Facebook pictures of his trip.
Yeah.
I think there's some Disney involved.
How dare he rub it in that we're here and he's not.
Is it a Florida or California trip? I'm not certain.
Florida.
Florida Disney.
Yeah.
Ooh, we could just spend this whole episode gossiping about Dave and speculating about his vacation.
I think he wouldn't like that.
Exactly.
I think he'd find out about it. You know, it's only really good gossip is when it's behind someone's back.
Well, here's the question, John. When do you hit that age that you feel like you have to take the kids to Disney, you know?
Ooh, that's a good question.
You are a new father.
Yeah.
That's right.
I have a 9-month-old at home, so he like doesn't appreciate that kind of thing yet.
He's so unappreciative.
Yeah, he appreciates my bald head, which I think is really funny.
Like
if I present my bald head to him, he just loves it. He'll slap it and he'll put it in his mouth. It's pretty funny, actually.
What is the memory forming age that they can appreciate these things?
Bald heads or Disney?
I think the head might go, but Disney, like, you don't want to spend all that money and then all of a sudden they don't appreciate it.
I thought you were going to say, like, what is the memory forming age for, like, you know, like traumatic childhood memories things that you imprint on, and then every time he sees a bald head, it's going to make him feel really funny in the
child.
Future and he's not going to understand.
Every time he plays pool, he freaks out or something. But what do we know? Is it, I'm sure we've learned about in class, is it 4, 7? At a certain point, we can all drag back to that memory.
What's your earliest memory?
I remember there was a TV and I was eating food and I couldn't see the TV. I was faced the wrong direction and I could see the reflection in a painting at my house. There was a glass. And I just remembered like thinking that was kind of novel. And I think I was pretty young, but I don't remember the exact age. So I was being fed, if that's any. So probably like 16 or 17.
So strange, the random. So strange, the random things we decide to that we end up remembering.
What do you
really
have?
Random details. I don't know. You're gonna have to come back to me. I'm searching. Probably like a track meet or something.
See, that's fairly old then.
School. Yeah, I don't have like a lot of really early. Well, okay.
Really?
I probably do, but it's really really hard to tell what is actually my memory versus what is. Been told to me time and time again by my family, and I really am not very well able to differentiate those.
Or like a picture of yourself that you saw from a time.
Right.
My earliest...
We had lots of home movies, too, so like all I can think of is these home movies. Like, that memory is more clear than any real memory.
Okay, I think my earliest one is wearing weather inappropriate shoes in elementary school. I have this distinct memory of looking down at my shoes, stepping in a puddle, and then while seeing water seep into my shoes, realizing that my feet were getting wet.
Oh.
And I think that was like, I remember the school building I was at, so it had to have been 4th, 5th, or 6th grade. And I think it was 5th grade.
And there was an emotion tied in.
Yeah, it was unpleasant.
That's a big deal, I think.
Earliest buzzkill memory.
Every dream I have, I very rarely had a dream that was just like, oh, I was walking and it was sort of like, every dream has a strong emotion, be it happy, sad, a lot of like anxiety, you know, that's always something that I'll wake up and I'll really remember the dream if there's an emotion there.
Do you have a stress dream?
I get teeth dreams. And I posted this on, so Eileen, she doesn't like when I post on Facebook because too many people like my things.
Does it make you jealous, Aline?
I don't know what it makes her. She doesn't like it, but I did post the other day.
Why gotta bring this up publicly? I can't believe our issues between us. I don't understand.
You won't let me gossip about Dave, so we have to talk about something.
Everything's out in the open now.
So I have teeth dreams, and so these are dreams
so
where
sounding.
It sounds weird, but it's a real thing. It's the most common dream that people have, and I post on Facebook, and hundreds of people were like reaching, like sending me things like, I have these. Oh my gosh. I, like, what happens in yours? So it's always something where the tooth is loose and it falls out. And typically the tooth, it shatters or breaks. It's never just a clean pull of a tooth. And so many people can recapitulate this dream. So I don't know if maybe that's a traumatic experience as a childhood. We've all had it. You know, and no one likes
losing
teeth.
I've never had this dream.
No, okay. I think this is fundamental to human experience. I think you've found it. That's heaven is teeth dreams.
Heaven is teeth.
Wait, are we sure that's heaven? I feel like you're just tossing that word around really loosely.
What? Teeth?
Teeth.
Heaven.
Or heaven.
A lot of people have teeth.
Let's keep saying teeth.
Don't worry about it.
Is teeth
just 40 minutes of teeth.
Is that a no word? I was told by a dentist recently, we're not supposed to call them mouth bones. That's not anatomically correct.
Really? What are they then?
Teeth? They're much harder, apparently.
Yeah, dentin is tough stuff.
You know, bone sort of reabsorbs. It's a living organism.
That's true. You don't have... So your bone gets, like, reabsorbed, or more bone is laid down, depending on your calcium needs at any given time.
Right.
But that's true. It doesn't happen in your teeth. So they're not... like regular bone.
It does, however, happen in your teeth dreams. See, that's how you resorb your teeth.
That's called a kicker.
Where your teeth are actually made of, like, ceramic.
They're made of dreams.
China.
One of my teeth is made of ceramic, like, actually.
Is it?
Yeah. I don't know if it's ceramic, actually.
Chip tooth?
Mm. Yeah, you told me about that. Uh-uh. So, I heard
nope, it got knocked out in basketball. Doesn't that make me sound like a badass?
You should tell people that more often.
I know.
Especially your future patients. I was going to say, I heard about a tradition recently in some parts of the country where people just get their... They used to get their teeth pulled at the age of, like, 17 or 18 and then just wear dentures their whole lives.
Oh, you're from the South. Like, preventative?
Because they would go bad? Or like,
have you heard about this?
No.
Your teeth look pretty good, John. Tell us about it.
So I love that I've like so I grew up in the South, all right? I lived there until I was about 12, but now I'm like, I'm suddenly the expert on any kind of
welcome to my world.
Yeah, this is good. No, this
girl
is good.
Born in Canada.
Oh, we didn't know that about you.
Yeah, well, now you know.
All the secrets will be revealed today.
Canada, North Carolina.
Dave is missing out on the best of the best.
And there's no way for him to hear it retroactively.
Never.
He'll never find out.
So this is interesting, though. So maybe this is a place where the hygiene is so bad that they just think, listen, we'll yank the teeth out now, save you a bunch of
pain. That's what I think. Pain. It's in places where people don't have access to adequate dental care. They just get their teeth pulled.
See, a common problem, even here in Iowa, is the bad diabetic who doesn't take care of themselves, obese, they smoke. And a lot of times, if you and I maybe had this certain ulcer or certain bone pain, they would say, like, well, you know, take some time off. And these people, they'll actually do an amputation pretty quickly because they're realizing that this course is not going to change. It's going to lead to an amputation. We can start at the toe and keep working our way up, or we just take the entire limb.
Oh, because it can't heal?
It's probably not going to. And realistically, if this person maybe actually changed their lifestyle, it could. But that's a scary... So that's why it's interesting. Like, it's a real problem. I don't know how you weigh... how do you sell that to a person? It'd be one of the hardest, scariest
things.
Look at this
sweet saw. It's like, I'm either going to cut off your toe now, or I'm going to cut off your leg in a month.
Yeah.
And also, it's going to smell bad. So, like, I don't know. I feel like that'd be a pretty easy sell to me.
Smell is a strong...
But maybe I understand... Like, maybe having the perspective of, like, sort of understanding the course of the disease gives me a little bit different perspective than someone who's just being faced with, like, you're going to lose some part of your body.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was... Like, my own mom, she'll get the bad allergies, and I'll be like, take some stuff. Like, there's stuff out there for that. She's like, well, that doesn't work. And I'm like, it's not a sugar... You know, so now that we've studied it, I've seen textbooks, I buy it. Like, I'm at the Church of Medicine. I buy it, right? She's still in, like, I think a lot of people are sort of like, it might or might not work. Attitude,
about
mindset.
Antihistamines or...
Well, antihistamines, I think there's some, like, bronchodilators. There's all sorts of stuff that it does work. I know it works. Science shows it works. But, like, I think even I used to be in this mindset of, oh, I'll take a couple aspirin, and I really don't know if that does anything. But now I know it absolutely does something.
Yeah.
And not always good things.
A lot of bad stuff.
Although, admittedly, it can feel different for different people. Like, I don't know. That's why they have a million different, like, high blood pressure medications, because some people's bodies work better with some than with others. So, like, I don't know. Maybe she just needs to try a different type.
We'll work with her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I have a tooth story. It's just silly. I mean, we're talking about teeth.
It really is going to be 40 minutes of teeth.
We should have had a dental student here for this. This is just embarrassing.
We wouldn't have ended up talking about teeth. We'd have ended up talking about something no one wants to hear about, like gums or moist something.
Moist. I do. Okay, so this is also relevant to earliest memories. I remember one of my grandma's had dentures and the other one did not. And you can probably see where this is going. So, like, one of them would, like, let me take out her dentures sometimes, like, if she was getting ready for bed because I thought it was cool. But then, like, I was at the other one's house, and I, like, grabbed her teeth and tried to pull on them, and I was like, why won't they come out?
That's pretty cute.
That's not, that did not go in the direction I thought it was going to go.
Oh. Really? Where did you see it going?
I thought you were going to put them in your mouth, and then yeah. I got really...
There's some visuals.
I mean,
only I
can
appreciate
that
joke.
But...
Cool.
Well, we discussed before, and John was starting to head down this alley, and then we stopped him and said, we'll save it for the show. So... John teased this as the greatest human endeavor ever, which is the Rice 4 project. Is this correct? I don't know anything about this.
So there's been a lot of talk about GMO. Cole brought up this idea that
Chipotle's gone GMO allegedly, and some people are saying it's bunk science.
Huh. Yeah. So the idea behind
what do you
that
mean
is
by gone GMO.
No GMO. They've basically said we're not having any GMOs because it's, I don't know, somehow bad for you or something. And I try not to get too much on the soapbox about it because GMO is such an enormous label, right? Anytime you make any kind of genetic change in a directed way to an organism, it's GMO.
And we've been doing it to corn for literally, like, thousands and thousands of years. Like, before Europeans came over to America, like, people were genetically modifying corn, just in a much slower way than we can do it right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and selective breeding, right? I mean, yeah. We have the modern dog because we selectively bred wolves. We have... You know, we can say this with all sorts of cattle and oxen and mules and horses and et cetera. Much of the animal and plant worlds we've tamed to suit our needs. But there's been this project to try to completely recreate rice on a separate. So there's two ways of creating sugars with photosynthesis. One is C3 and one is C4. And the C4 methodology is extremely efficient. It's many times more efficient. These systems evolved independently.
Is that the one they do at night? I'm reaching way back to, like, freshman year biology here.
Yeah, I'm not going to be able to explain to you all of the differences. It has to do with particular enzymes in the transport chain, basically, okay. Like the electron transport chain.
Okay.
But...
What is that?
The carbon fixation. I yep. totally remember that.
With O2, right. Yeah.
So... C4 is so much more efficient, but there are many fewer plants actually run off that. Most of what we eat are grasses.
Note, C4, not the explosive kind.
No.
It just means four carbons.
Right.
So plant is breaking down a four carbon, or like using a four carbon molecule yep. instead of a three carbon molecule. Okay.
And it's so much more efficient that the... most of the world eats rice, and most of our calories as a species essentially are provided by rice. And rice is actually already a pretty ideal crop. It grows in, you know, just complete garbage soil. You can grow it in water. So it's a real opportunity for people who basically could plant nothing else. Switching and basically rebuilding rice off of this different photosynthetic process would dramatically improve yields. I mean, factors of several times. And would really increase food security throughout the world. So it's a really good example of how the public opinion has completely missed the point. They've mm-hmm. completely lost it, and they're just, and it's sort of marketing. It's all marketing talk.
Yeah, part of the way that we are able to feed as many people as we can right now is because we had sort of like, what is it, the Green Revolution, mm-hmm. Where they really started genetically modifying things in sort of large scale, and then... I think rice was a big one for that one, too.
Mm-hmm.
And then growing them in places where they previously hadn't had good access to food. Does this... Will this help with the problem of food distribution, though? Or is it just going to put more food where they're already growing food?
It's hard to... And some of those questions are hard to answer, right? I mean, there are a lot of famous issues with you know, when you increase the supply of something, you can actually make problems worse. We ran into that with Uncle Sam's rice. We bring rice over to these two countries after, you know, something bad happened, a big flood or something like that. And then just completely destroy the local economy because we were basically giving out free rice or really cheap rice and they couldn't compete. And so why would a farmer do that? Why would a farmer go out and plant if they can't compete with this nearly cheap rice?
On a side note, that is a really big argument for why a lot of our aid to Africa is, well, not a lot, but some of it is ineffective because we destroy local economies. For example, if there's a guy in Africa who can make, you know, nets that protect someone from mosquitoes at night, from malarial infection, but we send, you know, a quarter million of them over for free, then it plays to the idea that we infantilize Africa a lot. Instead of empowering them with the resources to fix their own problems with the local culturally relevant knowledge that they have, we just like dump a bunch of things on them and say like, oh, here, this must fix your problem. If we just throw some money at it, I'm sure that'll fix the problem.
I think that is very true. And you, I mean, you can see it even in, you can see the weird westernized things like just scattered around whenever you see a video of like a village in Africa or a city in Africa. Like they showed us these pictures of some women in, I think it was in Africa, in one of our lectures the other day. And I was very struck because she was standing there just, you know, just like talking in front of her, like I don't know, like you could tell it was not, probably not America, like it was a more stylized house and all that, and then she had on like a t-shirt that had a big number one colored like an American flag.
Yeah.
Because like we send them random clothes.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know, like that was,
maybe they don't want our
me.
Clothes. Like
yeah.
Maybe they want to live nudely. And I'm not even being facetious, like, you know, like clothing is a Western concept.
I want to live nudely.
I mean, you know, maybe it like it decreases their incidence of skin cancer because clothing is skin protective. But I mean, like, think about it. Like, we don't know anything about their society. We just go in there, throw a bunch of objects at their problem because we assume they're as consumerist as we are. And maybe they're not.
They will be when we make them.
Dave, let the record show that we are all, in fact, recording this in the nude.
That's why you left.
It's supposed to be our secret.
I mean, this is it's fallen out of favor. I think in the 90s, it was a big deal. Even 2000s, the microfinance, Grameen Bank, these sort of large banks, they infiltrate the economy. They certainly change the economy. But the hope is they supplement it so that your guy who's doing the mosquito nets maybe can scale his production up a little bit as opposed to flooding the market. So I'm not saying it's the perfect alternative, but there are certain workarounds to this. There's ways to aid. I think also the medical community does an interesting, you know, I think the vaccination way. So that's probably not, that might flood the, you know, flooding the economy with health does not seem to be a problem.
No,
so
no. Yeah, that's,
there's certain
that's
approaches.
Different.
So I don't know how we, it's interesting because you never want to deter someone from sending over blankets or food, but
yeah.
Yeah, there definitely is a time and a place for that kind of thing where it can be very helpful.
And
yeah.
And I think a big part of it is about, you know, not having really good knowledge on the ground. You know, if we had a better, you know, if everyone in the, you know, developing world had access to the internet or something like that, if you were able to set that up and then people could really communicate about their wants and needs and desires, I think we'd have a much more effective way of delivering those things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, a mosquito net might be an equivocal example because probably everyone's better off if there are more people with mosquito nets, but like clothing is an excellent example. We send over what's ostensibly like junk clothing from America. You know, you don't see a lot of people wearing like gaudy American flag like jean jackets and stuff, but they're, you know, you see this stuff all over the developing world because that is where it ends up.
Crap, we send them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I want to change gears. Maybe we take a quick break, come back.
The Art of Medicine podcast explores topics in medicine through the lens of the arts and social sciences. Learn about an epileptic woman who created a virtual reality grand mal seizure, what doctors can learn from jazz musicians, and the experience of sexual assignment in a medicalized body. Download us on iTunes and visit us at www.theartofmedicinepodcast.com. We are a member of the Vocalis Network, the podcast network for medical students. Please listen to our partner podcasts at vocalisnetwork.wix.com/listen.
All right, and we're back.
All right. Woo! You're not
great.
Dave.
This feels so weird.
Who are you?
I made some changes in my life, guys, and this is what I sound like, right? Said Dave.
Never. We wanted to do a year in review for the first year med students because some of us M2s, like John and I think we're a little jaded. I think they take the schedule easy on us a little bit towards the end, so we might have a bit sunnier outlook. So I want to hear about your 2 year in review. What were some, we won't say high points, but what were some good days, some bad days?
He asked us during the break to think about high points, and we were both like, what high points? We just came off a really brutal test, so maybe don't take us totally seriously.
Okay. There's a theory going around the class that they don't want us to do well, because otherwise we'll get cocky and complacent, and we won't work hard.
I've heard that.
Yeah. But the challenge is, how do you beat someone down just hard enough that they'll want to get back up, but not so hard that they just, like, splay on the ground and just completely give up?
I think that is the... like major question of training anyone for anything, and especially something that's really hardcore. Like I have compared medical school to like a sort of lesser version of like, maybe not lesser, but like a modified version of like a boot camp almost. Like you don't get yelled at as much, but you spend tons of time like doing all this work and doing all these really like hardcore intense things. You're introduced to things like a basement full of dead bodies.
Yeah.
You know, the are, if not quite traumatic, at least impactful. And you're learning all these new skills and stuff, and you get really close to, at least at our school, we've gotten really close to the people in our class.
That's true. I've often felt like, I don't know, there's some moments where I'm studying and like an analogy comes to mind, and a lot of the times it just feels like there's someone hanging over my head, like just plucking one hair out at a time, or like coming back to teeth, just pulling my, just, like, no, I'm just gonna, it's okay, it's cool, just let me do that, I'm just gonna, oh, see, it's fine, you're gonna be all right.
How
all right, now
focus?
The next one, I don't know.
Wait, so you're saying it's painful? I don't understand
your
analogy.
It's painful, but compassionate.
Okay.
Like, it's hard, but there's a lot of really nice, supportive people who are, like, I've honestly felt sometimes like school is like having needles stuck in me. Like,
it's
but slowly.
We hurt you because we love you.
Yeah, a little bit. Like, slowly, but with a lot of, like, compassion and kindness about it. But there's still this needle going into me, and I have to find a way to survive this. And it helps when there's people on the sidelines being like, you can take that needle. It's okay. You got this.
Okay. This is not a leading question. It's very open-ended, but it's going to sound leading.
Okay.
How has your perception of time changed? I know every person I've talked to has some radically new view of time after they go through this process.
What do you mean? Like, I feel like everything keeps going faster. Like, every year of my life goes a little bit faster.
Everyone says something different,
before.
But no one says, oh, it hasn't changed. Everyone I talk to is like, oh, this thing's radically new for me.
It happens a lot where, like, something will happen in the morning, and in the afternoon I'm like, oh yeah, that thing that happened yesterday, no wait,
okay,
that was in the morning.
So you think it's accelerating, it's going quickly,
much faster.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if it's just med school specifically. I feel like this has been a thing like every year of my life since maybe high school, like mid high school has gone a little bit faster, it feels like. And I think some of that is just, it continues to feel even shorter, like, relative to how much life I've already lived.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, no, I mean, it definitely, and we're very busy all the time, which makes time feel like it's passing faster.
Yeah.
Okay, how about your emotional, spiritual, right? Your being.
I don't think you want me to talk about that on the radio.
Has it been dark? It's okay if it's dark. I'm just curious about this.
You're talking to two of the darkest people in the class,
okay.
I think.
So for me, I know, and I don't mind being honest about it. I felt often like I've been right on the brink. Like,
okay.
It's really, like, it's such an emotional roller coaster to a point where it's very changeable minute to minute. And sometimes it only takes one comment from someone to completely... not like set me off, but just make, like, now I have these weird instincts where, like, I'll hear someone make a comment and I, without even thinking, I just walk away. I just, like, oh yeah, that's cool. Like, on the surface, I'm fine, but then I have to get away from that. Like, it might be something like, yeah, I'm all caught up, or like, oh yeah, I did so well on that exam, but I didn't really work that. Like, stuff like that. It has an immeasurable effect on my well-being.
Little things that trigger your self-esteem
yeah,
crisis.
Sometimes it's totally fine, but other times I have to, like, Oh, Aline, you're, oh shit, it's the abyss. You gotta get away from here.
Abyss,
walk,
abyss.
Walk away. And I know that people here don't take it personally because everyone's trying to survive. Everyone's got their little quirks like that. But I know for me, it's like the emotional roller coaster is on all the time. And I don't know how I'm gonna feel at the end of the day. That's why I've been so out of touch with all my friends and family because, like, I know, like, I've got a list of emails piled up in my inbox and I keep meaning to write back, but sometimes when I get home at the end of the day, I'm in such a bad mood and I don't want to write them all this negative nonsense. And I'm like, I'm going to wait until I'm in a better mood, and then I never get to that better mood until the end of the semester or spring break.
Yeah. So you're pushing your happiness off right now, you feel like.
Yeah, okay. I haven't found a way to move from surviving to flourishing here yet.
Yeah. I bounce back and forth from feeling like, okay, I got this. Today I got this. And then, like, I don't know. Like she said, it's a good analogy that, like, the abyss will kind of sneak up on you. And for me, it's not as much other people saying things, but sometimes it's other people just being in a bad mood. Like, if I come home and someone in my household is like, feeling down, and there's a lot of that in my household, like, there's a lot of us all fighting with depression, but then we all kind of bring each other down. Like, I've semi half joked to them that, like, can we have one day when somebody's not just depressed, please? Can we just do that one time? But, you know, but, like, I don't know, like, that for me, that's a mood killer when the people are close to me are feeling really down and I know I can't do anything about it.
Have you found any hacks, any tricks, you know, they'll get you through the day, get you through the hour?
Coffee.
Yeah, coffee helps. Coffee. Lying to yourself.
Lying. Okay.
Fake it till you make it. Like, oh, sure. Hey, you so can depressing. Do like cheerleading yourself, basically.
I would recommend meth. They said at the beginning of medical school, they showed this survey, you know, what percentage of medical students used which substances. Yeah. And it was like, you know, 80% of medical students use alcohol and 20% used marijuana and 1% used cocaine, methamphetamine, and heroin. And I was like, I'm trying to find that other guy.
Where's Methy Mike?
I mean, wait a minute, not that other guy. I'm trying to find that guy.
You have to look at the teeth.
Yeah, if you don't know him, he's you, right? Is that the...
Oh, no! I'm Methy Mike!
Well, I think it was 2%. 2% used heroin. And
oh,
I was like,
now the truth
who's
comes
got
out.
The stash?
Who's got the money? Heroin's expensive.
That's not that
don't
expensive.
Want anything to
Good to know.
I don't want anything to do with opiates because they make you nauseous.
Yeah.
And I just can't stand that. Like, the only time that
just
I've
take
tried...
more.
No! Then I fall asleep and there's no point.
H2 blocker. We'll power through.
The only time that I've ever had any opiates was when I had hydrocodone after I got my wisdom teeth out. Oh. And I was like, I mean, I'm hurting a little bit. It's evening. You know, I'm going to try this and see what all the hype is about. And then I took one and I was trying to play Portal, which is a game where you need to both left click and right click. I was trying to play
listening
the co-op
Dark
mode with
Side
my
of
boyfriend.
The Moon.
I was trying to play co-op mode. It's like a puzzle game. And I couldn't right click the mouse. I lost my understanding of how to right click the mouse. That became too complicated. And so I just gave up and went to sleep.
This is how you deal with your problems, right?
I woke up 3 hours later and I was like, never again.
You can't right click on your homework, you know?
No.
Then you can't overthink it. That's why it's
metaphor?
The ultimate solution.
One thing that does help a lot, though, and I don't even know how to put this. It feels really good when you've wasted a Sunday not studying and you come to school and you feel really guilty about it. And other people are like, no, dude, me too.
Mm-hmm.
I totally
nice.
Commiserate.
Yeah. That even if they're lying to me, it still feels good. It still feels good to know that you're not alone. And I have to admit, one thing that's really changed over the last few months is that I've developed, it's weird, like, as much as medicine can be confidence shattering, it's also developed my confidence.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's taught me to not focus on optimizing shit that doesn't matter.
Okay.
It's also taught me to focus on what's important and also to be way, way, way less judgmental of other people.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good quality to have.
Yeah. I mean, it's not to say that I was very judgmental before. You know, this is my brain space. I'm allowed to think whatever I want here as long as I'm nice to other people. But realizing that, like, people can hurt in ways that are very, very different from how I hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And appreciating that for 1 second they can see that I'm hurting and just, like, come and be sad with me. I think that's the thing that makes me feel better. When I'm sad, I appreciate when people are like, oh, I'm going to come be sad along with you.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. We'll be all right. We'll get through this.
I see. This is interesting. You know, I think a lot of this conversation is centered around attention. Yeah. And that is to say, a tension between, not attention, but a tension between.
Psych me out.
I could see that going either way, though.
A tension between.
We're human beings.
Between both your feeling challenged or spurred on by your classmates, but also feeling supported by them. And I think that's a really interesting sense of community. And I see that that's a problem that I have a lot in common with. In medical school here, and I don't see that it really goes away ever. I participated in a lot of the Examined Life conference this past week and or 2 weeks ago. And
time.
Yeah, that time thing we were talking about.
Yeah. Well, the problem compounds when you have a child at home too.
Oh, no, but, thank you.
But a lot of those talks were centered around. Just this kind of issue, and how does medicine miss the point? How does medicine miss the point of the person or the society that it serves because of those contexts? You know, you talked about not optimizing shit that's not important, and I think that's really important because we need to focus on what are we focused on? What
There's
are
too
we?
Much. You can't do everything,
mm-hmm. right?
And you can't do most of it that you have to do even. Like, you can't do perfect or even close to perfect. Like, some stuff you just have to get through it and get it done.
Yeah.
And recognize what you do have to do perfect and then put the time into that.
Yeah. I think the point is that you learn to be more accepting of yourself and realize your limits. And it's not until you're pushed to the limit that you know where the limit is. I think that's a big goal in med school.
I agree. And, I mean, it's like, it is kind of what you talked about before. Like, how do you get to that limit or even a little bit past it without being unable to get back up? Like, because medicine is hard. It is a hard career field, and medical school is hard, and it's supposed to be. And, like, it is their job. If they're not pushing us, they're not doing their jobs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But at the same time, it's, like, it is difficult to find that balance between, like, how do you push someone far enough that they're really, truly growing and stretching their limits without just breaking them?
Exactly.
And I think I actually think a lot of what we do is we've set up an environment where people push themselves, mm-hmm. but you set up perverse incentives, and I think their goal actually is to guide. Their goal is to guide you and to try to channel you into productive means of competition or productive means, at least in my mind, that the ideal goal there is to channel that in an appropriate way. Because it doesn't, you know, not everywhere does that work out well.
No. I think University of Iowa's done a really good job of trying to get us to lean on each other, because one of the best protective factors for when you are pushing those boundaries is having other people who are going through it with you, yes, but just, like, being able to reach out to any other people
who are
willing to support you.
When I was an undergrad, I got to see this. I think maybe you guys never had exposure to this. I had numbers of classes that did not disclose median grades, average grades, even the grade distribution. It's sort of assumed here that you get that. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. It's just, it's a foregone conclusion. And that's sort of part of maybe the anxiety, maybe it's a bit of fire that gets you going. But you're acutely aware of where you're at. Every single test. It's tough to be under the microscope like that.
And I think that's a big part of it. You know, you let on with that. They did, you know, set that up so that you can see where you are. And part of what you guys have hinted at, the maturation of moving on is learning, you know, oh, I've got to pick this hot coal up. But if it burns you, just drop it, you know, and there are those cases where you're like, oh, okay, I'm not going to care about this thing that doesn't matter anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to try to optimize this thing because you set your priority.
Well, that's what, here's the new problem when you're in second year, the boards are coming up, right? That's a big focus.
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. And if you're doing too well in the class, you're spending too much time on it. Like, it's a weird thing. Like,
literally,
you don't want to dip, but if you're starting to see, you're starting to get a lot of like, oh, I'm getting a lot of 90%+, it's like, okay. Okay, you need to back off, man. Like, you're spending way too much time. That's a weird problem to have.
That hasn't happened to me since undergrad.
I don't foresee that being a problem at all.
Yeah.
doing too well.
People really pull back second year. One other thing I thought was a thought in meditation was when you do the same thing every single day, Okay. So you guys, I think you have a little variety in your schedule, but overall, your day-to-day is pretty similar.
There's a lot of variety in our schedule. In fact, just today, I missed a class because they changed the schedule yet again, and I did not upload it recently enough yet again, or maybe I did, and it just wasn't correctly updated because some people's weren't, and rant.
That's frustrating.
And rant.
But there's still this sort of this schedule of a class and the study period, class-study period. When you get in the same schedule, and sometimes you'll have to do it 7 days a week, so there's not even a break. There, you try to get the Sundays in, but if you can, or you're in a crunch time month, you... What I realized is that when you do the same thing every single day, you start to be able to track your brain better in a weird way. The same reason that if you meditate every day, you can start to say, you know, where am I at? Where's my brain at today? Because you will find, I used to think that, okay, all these outside things were affecting my life, you know? When I did the same thing every day for a month, which probably this last month it's been like that, I realized that random Tuesdays I'll wake up and I'll be in a horrible mood. And if I'm doing the same thing every day, I know it has nothing to do with the outside world. It's purely my brain. And then, like, the next Tuesday, I'll be really happy. And I think old me would have said, oh, it was because this thing. It's because I had to get up early on this date. It's because of this activity. Mm-hmm. My life is so similar every day. I have now figured it out. I think it's just the brain. I don't think it's the outside stuff.
That's an interesting observation because, yeah, I think a lot of people, like, we try to assign reasons. If we're unhappy, we try to assign reasons for it.
Yep.
Instead of just being like, I'm just in a bad mood.
Bad brain day.
Either need to, yeah. Yeah, like, it's really easy to get into this spot where you're like, well, I can't be happy because I don't deserve to be happy because I suck because of these reasons.
I have a theory about that. Are you done?
Sorry. Yeah, go for it.
I realized I really completely your jumped brain. In.
Stupid brain.
So I don't know who I was talking to about this recently, but we were talking about how, like, I have a theory that your brain is rigged against you. Your brain doesn't want you to take risks. Your brain doesn't want to try new things because risk increases the likelihood that you're not going to survive. And your brain wants you to survive. It doesn't want you to do shit that makes you unhappy. It doesn't want you.
So true.
Yeah. And so you have to, it's this weird situation where you have to notice your own thinking. You have to use the very organ that you use to think to analyze the very organ that is used to, oh God, my brain. Anyway.
Meta.
But you see what I mean, right? Yeah, very meta. So the whole point is that, like, your brain will do things to you to make you unhappy, to dissuade you from doing things. And you have to find a way to power through that and think on a different level that, like, no, I need to get through this. I have to get through this. And realize that, like, the benefit is not in the short term, it's in the long term. Mm-hmm. But your brain doesn't think that way.
Well, one of the best illusions your brain's ever put on is the illusion of scarcity. You know, for the last million years, humans have operated from a point of scarcity with scarce food, scarce resources, fierce competition. We're in a period of opulence right now. And for example, your test grades, you can get a point and that won't sacrifice your competitor's point. Your brain still hangs on to that, though. When the person's like, oh, I did really well, why is there that tinge of, you know, it should just...
What do you care what
right,
other people did?
You're not competing against each other.
It's not a scarcity world anymore, and there's enough food to go around, and there's probably enough residency spots for you and your... There's enough.
That might not actually be true.
Yeah.
Residency spots.
It depends on the school, but I think for a person out of a good school, I think you'll have a decent opportunity. So the scarcity thing's pretty not real.
Yeah, so that's a really good example. I think that's a perfect way of framing that, because you know, like, if you look at residency, for example, there were tons of residency spots that went unmatched. Like, I mean, even places like diagnostic radiology had like 100 or more unmatched spots.
Because radiology is really hard.
It's because there are a bunch of things that people, you know, like, there's not enough room for everyone to be an orthopedic surgeon.
Yeah.
Nor should everyone be an orthopedic surgeon. But, you know, there are plenty, if you're going to count, you know, primary care specialties, there's more than enough room to go around. But it's the zero sum game problem, right? You think anything that I lose, you know, or anything that Cole gains is my loss. Mm-hmm. And that's absolutely not true, right? Especially if we're going to try to cultivate something, you know, things like medicine, which are in theory built on these ideas like universal human dignity, and we believe, you know, that everyone deserves a right to a better, healthier, happier life.
Whoa, what? What
Wait,
is this?
That person can have dignity without it taking away from my dignity?
Exactly.
Tell it to the Supreme Court, yo.
Zero sum dignity. All right. We're hitting time.
Oh, wait, wait, wait. I do have one actual high point, just so we're not totally depressing.
Please.
Frolics was amazing.
Oh, yeah. You
so much fun.
All of you.
Being on stage, again, like, I miss theater, and I'm so happy that that is a thing that we do. And it was
awesome.
It was hilarious, and it was really fun.
Yeah, I think today's actually the last day. Well, this won't matter for you listeners, but today's the last day, I think, to buy a DVD.
Oh, I was on that, like, the first day it came out, so
I gotta go. All right, guys. Thank you so much for joining us. To the audience, thank you to my awesome crew here.
Woo! And thanks to Corey.
Yeah, and thanks to Corey the intern, who keeps us all in check.
Couldn't do it without
me.
You.
He's real, by the way.
Yep, he's
he
a real
is
person.
Real. Can I do my weird disease at the end of the?
Oh yeah.
At the end of the.
So
credits?
We're thinking we're piloting a new segment where at the end of the episode we tell you about a weird named disease.
Adiadecadokinesia. I think I butchered that.
Okay, write it down and we'll bring
that's
it
when
back.
You can't go like this.
Oh yeah, that's really this is really helpful. The
adiado,
people
yeah.
we're
it's
all
when you
doing
can't,
it.
It's when yeah. yep. It's when you can't rapidly shake your hand back and forth. It's a problem, people.
Shake my hand.
No, but it has to come after the credits so
okay,
that they
sorry.
Actually listen to the
sorry.
Credits.
That was just me teasing. Go.
Go.
Okay.
If you like what you heard on the Short Code Podcast today, leave us a review and some stars on iTunes or Stitcher. Before we go, we'd like to invite you to tell us about your moment of truth. If something strange or wonderful happened to you, if you're annoyed or pleased about something, or if you want to suggest a story idea to us, leave us a message at theshortcoat.com. Do follow and talk to us on Twitter so we can all stay up to date on what's happening at the margins of medicine. The show is made possible by this strange world we live in and a generous donation by Carver College of Medicine, Student Government, and the Writing and Humanities Program. Our executive producer is Jason Lewis. Our intern is Corey Christensen. Our opening music is by Dr. Vox, and our closing music is by C2C. Talk to you in 1 week.
Swinging cats of the heart. Swinging calcified amorphous tumors of the heart.
Nice.
And it's just like a that's little a tiny thing. Tumor that flops around inside the spaces of your heart. And it's not great. It can cause blood clots and stuff.
Not a fan.
But it's a swinging cat of the heart.
Nice.